All right, guys, welcome once again to your Don's Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and I've got John Barbin on the phone once again. And today we're going to be interviewing Mark Levy, who is one of the people on the watch list from the last Adonis Transformation Contest, and is definitely going to be a force in the Open Contest that comes around in January. And what we're going to do today is we're going to kind of dig deep into what Mark's got going on and some of the insights that he's got and kind of some of his just overall processes that he's discovered for himself to actually get himself into the shape he's in. If you've seen his pictures, I mean, it's pretty significant. So Mark, man, I appreciate you being here.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Brad, good morning.
Okay.
Cool. All right, so, Mark, let's just kind of get this thing kicked off right. We were talking a little while ago about some of the insights that you've had overall, just kind of some of the big aha moments. Why don't you kind of dig into those for a second?
Well, I guess the biggest change has been people's reactions with respect to the change they've seen in me. I wouldn't have considered myself an overweight person before. I don't think people that saw me saw me that way. But in hindsight, I mean, I had a lot of weight to lose. From a negative point of view, the one criticism I say I get from a lot of people is that I'm too darn thin. Put on some weight. And initially, I used to look at this with a negative overtone, feeling a little bit resentful, you know, saying, well, you know what, look at yourself. I mean, I wouldn't want to answer somebody that way because that's disrespectful, but I would say, you know, here they are telling me that I need to gain weight when really they should be asking themselves if they should be losing the weight. But over time, I've become comfortable with these kind of comments, and it's almost like a feeling of being able to be incognito. I mean, here I am, you know, I look thin when I'm, you know, wearing a shirt or a suit. You know, I give the impression of being an overall thin, skinny guy, but here I am underneath. I know what I really look like underneath. And when somebody will see me at a beach or at a pool party, it's like, whoa, dude, I never realized that's what you look like. Oh, my God, how did you get to be like that? And it's a whole change in the reaction that they have that they have to me.
And that's the big thing, right? The shirt on versus shirt off big.
You know, John, it's huge because, I mean, I've heard you mention that many times in the podcast. And, you know, do you want to be a shirt on or shirt off, you know, big guy? And on the one hand, being big shirt on is pretty much 90% of the time. So I can totally understand people that, you know, want to keep some fat on them and look big all the time because it is impressive. But ultimately, you know, to be comfortable with yourself, who do you really want to be? Do you want to be this guy that's sort of pretending to be this big muscular guy? Or do you want to, you know, be able to be the person who's as lean as he could be and feel really good about himself at an inner level? Mm-hmm. And with the shirt on, I didn't get that. I'd worked out for years in the gym, and I was, you know, husky guy, big, muscular, and just never really felt good about myself, especially when you're looking across at all these magazines and all you're seeing is these guys with single-digit body fat looking ripped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when people say you look skinny, they're making that reference to your shirt on look, not your shirt off look. And then it's a dramatic change in their attitude when they see you shirt off.
100%. I'll give an example, a little anecdote. I was at a birthday party, you know, a friend of ours, a 40th year birthday party on Saturday night. So here I am, you know, we're just chit-chatting the whole night, and I'm talking to this person, and she makes the comment again. It's a person I hadn't seen, her and her husband, probably in about, you know, 6 months, and it was a shock. Oh, my goodness, you're too skinny. You've got to put on some weight. And I just got a little bit, you know, ticked off by it because every once in a while, it just irks me, and I just pulled up my phone and I just went onto the website and I clicked onto the link for the Adonis website, pulled up my pics, showed it to her, and I said, "Do you still think I'm skinny?" Well, her reaction was completely different. There was skepticism. You know, this can't be you. It's got to be, you know, photoshopping.
Wait. She was in disbelief of your own picture that you showed her of yourself.
Complete disbelief. There was no way. And then we pulled the pictures up. I pulled up a few of the different pictures I had on my blog. And let me tell you, the reaction was night and day.
She thought you were BSing her with fake pics?
Totally.
Okay, well.
That's funny.
I mean, I don't even know what kind of statement that is about other people. I mean, they just don't want to believe it's possible. I don't know why people don't want to believe it's possible, but wow. That's just a wow statement right there.
Well, I was talking to somebody else the other day, and it was last night, actually. I was at another Christmas party, and we're just chit-chatting, you know, and I mentioned I work out a lot. And he says, oh, you know, do you have a, you know, defined six-pack? And again, I said, you know what, rather than just try to explain it, you know, I mean, I'm not going to put up my shirt in a party. I just went on the website, and I just showed him the picture. Mm-hmm. And his response to me was like, that's amazing, but I could never look like that. I could never get myself to be that lean. You must have always been naturally lean. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was never a guy who had a six-pack. I never had abs. Always had a little bit of, you know, flab around the belly. Just, you know, I would consider myself, I was a husky guy. And when I tell people, look, if I can do this, anybody can do it, they still have disbelief to, with respect to that.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people just, I mean, granted, it's not easy, but because they try so many things and it's made it so much more complicated, that I guess they just don't understand that, you know, it's hard enough as it is, you know, even keeping it simple. But if you can keep it simple, that's when you can kind of get that momentum, and then the beliefs kind of start to change when it starts to happen.
And that's a good point you bring up. Mark, we talked about this. Can you go into that? You were explaining before and what Howard just said about it being really complicated and being pre-programmed into believing a lot of junk from the fitness industry and not knowing where to go with things.
Sure. I've been training on and off, I guess a lot off, since I was maybe 16 years old. So I know my way around a gym, and I've read dozens and dozens of fitness magazines, and I bought into all the hype, you know, completely, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, you know, you got to eat the 5 meals a day. You got to have a lot of protein. You got to do these complicated workouts. Anything that came out, I would try it. And ultimately, none of it works. None of it gives you the polished look that you're looking for, which is a look that's, you know, either what you want to do. You want to look like a fitness model or a bodybuilder. That look that you see in that magazine is just never the look that you're quite attaining. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that there's so much noise out there, and there's so much hype, and you're so pre-programmed to accept this that even when the truth is staring you in the face, you don't want to accept it. And I knew when I read Eat, Stop, Eat, and they talked about intermittent fasting and the way Brad Pilon explained it, my wife, you know, and every woman I've known in my whole life has been doing this all their lives. I mean, they just stop eating when they want to lose weight, and it works for all of them. And so we know the truth, but yet we don't want to believe it. And we want to think that we know more, and we want to think that we can change it, and we can tinker with something and make it better. And even if it's not working, we're so vested in making it work that we don't want to change. We don't want to accept the simplicity of it. I think, at an ultimate level, things should be simple. Not easy, but simple. Mm-hmm. And I think that the combination of the program that we're doing and the nutritional lifestyle is simple. With respect to the Adonis program, the hardest thing in training was to try to manipulate the different parameters. Okay, how many reps should I do? How many exercises should I do? How many times a week should I train? And which exercises should I do? And how much weight should I use? And Adonis basically said, you know, man, you only have to think about one thing, how much weight you're going to use. We're going to take care of everything else. And that was a burden that came off my shoulders, because I had a roadmap that was set up in front of me. And all I had to do was every time I went to the gym, look at what weight I'd used the last time and go 5 pounds more than that. And that's what I did. And you know something? Suddenly it became simple. And that's something that I think a lot of people need to take from this Adonis program. When you go in, you're constantly pushing yourself. And you're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You're not trying to show that you know more. Because if you want to do your own program, then do what I was doing all my life and writing up your own programs.
And can you touch on that a bit? Where did you get your rationale for how you wrote your own programs?
Well, reading the fitness magazines, I mean, again, I grew up in a pre-internet world. You know, the internet's something that sort of came in later on in life. We would buy the magazines, the Muscle and Fitness, the Men's Health, and all the other ones. Compare the different programs over different years. You know, I remember buying the Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding, you know, Arnold's famous book, when I was 16 years old. And by reading and by practicing, find out what you like and what you don't like. You know, so you like barbell curls, okay, so we'll do them. Oh, you know what, you like easy curls better, you'll use those a little bit. You know, you suddenly read a program about some guy doing an incline curl with a little twist, okay, we'll try that. And then you ultimately find the exercises that you like doing, and you do those. The problem with that is that doing what you like is not necessarily what's going to work. Mm-hmm. It's the variety, it's the constant change that's going to work. So being forced to say, oh, look, you know, he's got a tape press here. Geez, I can't stand that, but I may as well do it because, you know, he put it in there for some reason. That's forcing the muscle to work at a different angle, putting a little bit of different of a fulcrum on it. And ultimately, I think that's what makes the difference.
And what was your rationale for how you periodized the program, or did you not even understand that concept?
I wouldn't even try to pretend that I understood that. I would pretty much always work in an 8 to 12 range because I, you know, read somewhere that that's kind of, you know, the hypertrophy stage. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would work at. And I would never work at a 3 to 5 rep range simply because maybe it was fear. Maybe I didn't want to, you know, it's a little scary to get under a squat bar and thinking I'm going to do 3 reps. And, you know, that's a lot of weight, you know, if your goal is going for 3 reps. Mm-hmm. Much more comfortable to think I'm going to go 8 to 12, you know, something goes wrong, I can re-rack that bar pretty easily.
Right. And then 21 reps, no one even thinks of that.
Oh, 21 reps. I mean, the first couple of times I did that, I was like, what the hell is this? You know, this is crazy.
So periodization was just, you didn't even understand, you wouldn't even know how to start it.
No, I wouldn't even know how to start. I would just take a program, maybe change the exercises, you know, use a one base, you know, exercise and then change the other two, do 3 exercises per body part, 3-4 mm-hmm. reps. I think that's going to do it. And you know what? Maybe when I was 16, 17, that did do it.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I didn't know anything about was that, you know, the whole concept of juvenile muscle growth. They're saying, you know, a guy who's, you know, 40 years old should not expect the results of a 21-year-old. I mean, it's logical.
Mm-hmm.
Should have known that, but of course, I never thought that mm-hmm. way because in my mind, I still see myself as a 21-year-old, you know, mm-hmm. training in the gym, and I should be getting as strong as I was back then, and I should be as fit as I was back then. And that was something else I think wrapped my head around.
No, man.
Just getting back into a gym, I probably haven't worked out at all in about 10 years or more. You know, got married, had kids, you know, started a business. You know, life takes a priority. And going back to a gym and, you know, knowing you were able to, you know, whatever, bench press, whatever, you know, a plate and a half, 2 plates, and suddenly going there and, you know, you got to put on, you know, the 25-pounders and you're having a hard time. It's kind of a sad situation and it discourages you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I had to do was get through my head that I'm not here to impress anybody. I'm here for myself. And if I'm going to curl 10 pounders or 15 pounders, then that's what I'm going to curl. And if anybody doesn't like it, well, too bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but nobody cares.
we say nobody cares, but in your mind, you think everybody's watching everything you're doing.
Sure.
And when you're not using a lot of weight. You know,
that was one of the things way back in the day when, especially women, when they would come to try to join a gym, they'd be really scared about people judging them and things like that. And I'd always say, look, nobody's going to judge you unless you come in a pair of pink and yellow polka dotted leotards. Other than that, nobody cares. Nobody's even going to recognize that you're here. So that's pretty interesting. I want to touch on 2 things really quickly that you brought up. And these are 2 insights that I just had from what you just said. Basically, we kind of talking about the overcomplication and things like that. But what I got from what you were saying is that, you know, choosing weights and understanding intensity as far as weight training is hard enough as it is. That's kind of a difficult thing. And then on the other side, tracking your overall calories is hard enough as it is. Like these 2 things are hard enough as they are. You know, why go any more complicated than that? It's hard enough doing that.
Oh,
does that make sense? That's kind of what I got out of what you were saying. You know, why try to put the rest of a program together when just understanding how to lift with enough intensity and at the right weight is going to be tough enough for most people. And the same thing with calories and things like that. You know, understanding where, you know, trying to, you know, do crazy manipulations and all the food changes and all this stuff. Why complicate that far when just getting the calories right? It's hard enough as it is.
Yeah, Mark, can you talk about what you did as far as diet goes? I think we seem to talk the training part through, but give us your insights on your sort of overall, I guess, is this a good time to transition into your overall sort of transformation from February to now?
Yeah, that sounds okay. So back in February is when I really got it in my head that I was, I had to get back into the gym. I had to take control of my diet. What had happened was in January, I'd gone to New York to visit a friend and just happened to take a hotel room where they gave me the room right across from the hotel gym. And I saw that as some sort of a cosmic sign that, you know what, I better work out. I mean, this is, you know, pretty blatant shot in the face there. So I went into the gym and I was just doing, you know, with one of these universal machines, it's just doing a little overall general workout. And here my friend walks in. He's 12 years my senior. I think I was doing tricep press down, something like that. And he proceeded to walk in, did double the amount of weight I was doing and for twice the amount of reps. And that was just like a revelation to me that, you know, if I don't change something soon, I just see a downhill road going from here. So when I got home, I joined a gym and I started training. I purchased an online program. It was one of these full-body workout programs, something very popular on the internet, and started training. And, you know, like I said, it was a bit intimidating at first because of the fact that I was much weaker than I remembered being, you know, 15 years ago. But it was okay, so I was working out over there, and that program focused on nutrition, but just by eating clean foods. You know, don't eat soya because of the estrogens, don't eat trans fats, cut the sugar, cut the wheat, you know, the basic stuff we're hearing on the internet all the time. Mm-hmm. And where I'm not gonna maybe, you know, ridiculize that approach, I think it's got its merits, and I think even today I sort of hang on to a lot of that, where, for example, I don't eat a lot of pasta. Mm-hmm. I don't eat a lot of bread. I don't eat a lot of rice. I mean, I'll eat it on the weekends, and I give myself that outlet because I like that stuff, but I don't make it a mainstay of my diet. The program, to get back to the program, so the program worked out well for a few months, and I hadn't come across Eat Stop Eat or Adonis. What I noticed was here I was, you know, eating super healthy. I mean, you know, I would eat an apple and a yogurt. I would be having, you know, these very, very healthy cereals. Everything was lean, no junk food at all. But I wasn't losing weight. In fact, I was gaining weight. And, you know, and first thing in my mind is like, well, of course you're gaining weight. You're training in the gym. You're putting on muscle. You know, you're going to be a big, big guy, you know? And this was what had always happened in my life. And I said, okay. So, you know, the weight was going up. It was going up. And suddenly it started going the other way and started coming down, but very, very slowly. I mean, I would maybe lose a pound in 3 weeks. It wasn't giving me what I wanted. And that's, I guess, I came across Eat Stop Eat through an intermittent fasting article I read on the internet, and started looking into this. And I said, you know something? Why don't we try this out? And why don't we start eating less? What a great concept! You know, we don't need to eat so much. So because I'd already developed some good habits, I didn't eat a lot of junk food. I wasn't eating a lot of, you know, pretty much anything that came out of a bag or a wrapper. I wasn't eating. I was, you know, eating a lot of healthy foods. I noticed immediately that the weight started just like coming off. And it was like, you know, where would it take me 3 weeks to lose 2 pounds or a pound? Suddenly in a week, I'm losing 3 pounds. And I'm like, wow, this looks pretty interesting. And within 2 weeks of that, I came across the Adonis system. And in all honesty, it took me a little while. I bought the program, but I didn't start it right away because here I was vested in this other program that I was enjoying. You know, I was getting stronger, doing full body workouts, buying into the whole hype that that's what you need to do. And I was saying to myself, maybe I should give this thing a real try, a good 3-4 months. But something told me, you know something, ESC and Adonis seem to be playing off each other. Let's go for it. Let's try to do it. And when I started the program, I realized right away, this is something unlike I've ever done. Because we were talking about it earlier, the fact that, you know, there's periodization. It's not always the same amount of reps. It's really changing. And the program looked like it was designed in a way that it would really maximize the experience of being in the gym. And then getting onto the podcast and really learning who's behind the program, that really turned it around for me because I realized that the guys behind the program really knew their stuff. And listening to the podcast and absorbing the lessons allowed me to really apply the lessons. You know, Brad, you talked earlier about intensity. I never really understood that term until I heard a podcast which explained what it was. I think it was a podcast named Are You Training or Just Working Out? I mean, I would go there and sure, I could do 10 reps, but was that really the most amount of reps that I can do? And was I doing that for each and every set and every exercise for the day? And when I started doing that, that's when the transformation started taking place. Hmm. And every time people would see me, they'd say, oh, wow, you look better. You've lost more weight. But it was the nutrition that really pushed it. I was following Eat Stop Eat. I would twice a week. And I decided early on that out of the three meals of the day, dinner time was the one that was important to me. That was the one that if I had to miss something, that's the one I didn't want to miss. Just because of the way my makeup is, I like eating at night. Skipping breakfast is not a big deal, and eating a light lunch or no lunch at all is no problem at all. And what I realized there was, okay, how am I going to make this fit into my life? How am I going to eat less yet not feel like I'm sacrificing everything in life? And once again, it was an article that Brad had written that talked about constraints in life. And he basically said, build this around what you're going to do and then deal with what you're not going to do. So, for example, you know you're going to eat on a weekend. Let's say, you know, you're going to go out and, you know, drink on the weekend because that's your thing. Well, figure out how many calories that's going to basically pack on and then cut somewhere else. So for me, you know, being married with kids, the weekends are the times that I spend with my family and we have, you know, big meals and then we have a family time together. And I didn't want to sacrifice that. So a Friday night, for example, I mean, I'll have a couple glasses of wine. I'll have appetizers. I'll have a main course. I'll have dessert. My carbs are eaten pretty much on the weekend. Sunday mornings, big breakfast, you know, the whole deal, pancakes, the works. But being able to enjoy those weekends and to look forward to being able to eat with no barrier on the weekend allowed me to not even care about cutting food during the week. And if it meant, you know, having a small little supper and having, like, you know, some you know, baked fish with some asparagus, that wasn't a big deal because I knew come the weekend I was going to have my bread and my pasta and my whole thing. And that's one of the things I try to, you know, one of the lessons I try to pass on to people, that you have to develop a style that works for you. And people sometimes tell me, oh, tell me what your diet is like and I'll do what you do. And I say, no, it doesn't work like that, because you can't do what I do because you're not me. You need to find what's important to you, what foods you like, what meals you like to eat, how you like to eat, and build something around that. And the formula that makes this work is the caloric load. Make sure you eat less calories than you expend, and it'll work. How you figure it out is not important. Hmm. And even to this day, after telling people this over and over, they still insist that I have to give them a diet. And, you know, maybe some people need that kind of rigidity in their lives, but I think it's much more sustainable if you find something that works for you. To this day, I mean, I'll eat dessert often at night, and if I know I'm going to have a piece of cake and it's 400 calories or whatever it is, then I'll have cut in that day 400 calories, or I'll cut the next day 400 calories to give myself the leisure to enjoy that, because ultimately, you know, life is about the pleasure we take out of it. Mm. And if this becomes an overall burden, then who the hell wants to do something that's not fun?
Yeah, and that's – now, is this way of eating – was that a revelation? Was that new to you? Like, I guess I'm biased now, because talking to everyone in our forums and stuff, that just seems so obvious now. But was this a bit really different for you? Like, realizing that you could just skip breakfast if you felt like skipping breakfast, and then, and, you know, load, like you said, like maybe get a lot more of your, you know, calories on the weekend, centered around family event. Like, to me, it just sounds so simple, and why? Of course you would do it this way. But was that, like, was it difficult for you to accept that that's how it works?
You know, I'd never even contemplated this notion that it could be something so simple. I mean, when we always talk about calories and how many calories you should eat, and even that number, I mean, when I first started with the 5 meal a day back in February, and I wasn't losing weight, I went onto one of these calorie counter websites and I started counting my calories. And I realized I was ingesting about 2,000 calories a day, which may seem fine, but ultimately it wasn't, because obviously I wasn't losing enough weight quickly enough to meet my needs. So we always think about calories. So, I mean, I think ultimately I ended up around 1,500. That was kind of my target to shoot for. But in my mind, you had to eat that every day. It's so obvious to say, well, no, let's do it on a weekly basis or do it on a monthly basis. But I guess we're not programmed to think that way. You know, there's 7 days in a week and it's 1,500 calories a day, and that's the way it works, and it's whatever that is, 10,500 calories, and that's how I have to do it. And if I blow it one day, I can't make it up by cutting off calories the next day. That doesn't make sense. Of course it makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say was that basically today I eat this. This is not a diet for me. This is a lifestyle. I rarely eat breakfast today. Lunch for me is once in a while, if I go out with somebody, I'll have a real lunch. But otherwise, it's just having a whatever in the office, maybe a protein shake, or I'll just have something very light, something not very heavy, because I like to eat a big supper. For me, sitting down and eating less than 1,000 calories at a meal feels restrictive. Mm-hmm. So I give myself that ability to enjoy my supper every single night, because I'll just cut the calories in the day.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because you do kind of the reverse of me. During the week, I seem to want to front load my calories at the beginning of the day. It just makes me happy. But I can totally blow off dinner for 2 or 3 days in a row and just have something like a little fruit and yogurt at the end of the day, and I'm just perfectly happy. And then it seems that works for me during the week, and then on the weekends, I would rather have bigger meals, because they're usually associated with going out. So I kind of flip-flop. During the week, I eat more in the morning, and on the weekends, I eat more in the evening.
Yeah. Well, the difference is you've got a little bit more flexibility, because you don't have some people you live with. I mean, like for both Mark and I mean, it's kind of the same thing where we use dinner to kind of like deload and kind of debrief and kind of get family together and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just part of our day. I mean, the way I eat is very similar to his. I very rarely eat breakfast. I mean, only if I'm just ravishing in the morning. Lunch, sometimes, it depends on how busy I am. I mean, I'll gladly blow through lunch. I mean, if I'm getting stuff done, you know, sometimes it'll be protein. Sometimes it might be a little bit of a leftover or something like that. Like, we got steak leftover in there. I might chomp on that, depending on how. But then again, you know, dinner is something that, you know, I just refuse to give up on because it just feels weird.
Mm.
Yeah, basic gist is that, you know, with John, you know, he's kind of single. So he has a little more flexibility in dinner and things like that, where mm-hmm. he can kind of go in and out. Where with you and I, you know, with living with people and having significant others and things like that, you know, that time of the night is a good time to debrief and kind of it's kind of a family. It's an event, basically. You know, so, you know, we incorporate those. So you and I eat roughly the same,
right.
You know, pretty much across the board. But I guess what it all comes down to, just like you were saying, it's what you do when nobody's looking that ultimately defines your success, just across the board anyway. And mm-hmm. so it would just make sense that nutrition would work that way as well.
That's interesting what you're saying there. Yeah, I agree. It's exactly that. It's what you're doing when nobody's around, because when people are around, everybody's on their best behavior and everybody's kind of just putting on this face. It's what you do during the day and the little things you do or don't do. I had a person who came to me, a friend of mine, and he was like, oh, you've lost all this weight and, you know, what's your diet like? And I'm like, look, I tried to explain to him the basic parameters. He's like, oh man, you know, I couldn't do that because I need my breakfast, I need my lunch, I need my supper. And I'm like, okay. I said, do you like coffee? He says, oh yeah, sure. And I said, do you drink those mochaccino coffees, whatever, cappuccinos? He says, oh, I love those. I said, well, how many do you drink? He says, oh, you know, three a day. I'm like, well, dude, man, there's like 1,000 calories a day you can cut out and not even
good
see the difference.
God.
No?
Yeah.
Change
that's,
mindset.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that's something that he probably didn't even realize. Like, I don't think, like, John put that post up on his blog and, you know, about the coffees, and I don't think a lot of people even realize that they're basically milkshakes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they are. It's, you can get up 500-600 calories in one of those things.
Well, here's another one. I had another guy who came to me, was a client of mine, and we were just chit-chatting. I mean, I find a lot of my clients are talking about this all the time because they see the change and they're always looking. They're impressed. They want to know what they can do. And he was like, you know, telling me, well, he can't lose any weight. And we start talking about it, and his diet doesn't seem to be too bad. And I don't know how the topic came up, but I'm like, do you drink any juice? He says, oh yeah, I love fruit juice. You know, I love orange juice and cranberry juice and all that. I'm like, well, how many of these do you drink? He says, you know, 2 to 3 of those 2-liter bottles a week.
Oh, God, there it is.
So there you go. Drink water instead, and you'll be more than fine. You know, sure enough, this guy's already lost 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a guy that literally, I mean, it sounds really funny, but he lost about 20 pounds just switching from regular soda to diet soda.
Well, that's you know why? Because those calories don't satisfy hunger at all. So your body doesn't.
Yeah.
You could drink your day's worth of calories, you know, in no time with any kind of soda or juice, without ever satisfying your feeling to need to eat. So if your BMR is 2,000 calories today, you can drink 2,000 calories without ever feeling like you've ingested 2,000 calories. Whereas if you've eaten 2,000 calories, your body perceives more or less that 2,000 calories are in. So.
So how come nobody ever says juice is junk food?
It's the worst thing you could possibly do is drink juice. It's just all it is water and sugar. Think about it. You're consuming sugar without the compensatory feeling of being satisfied in full. It couldn't be any worse of a combination.
Yeah, that'd be a good blog post for you about worst junk food
yep.
ever.
I could say I never drink juice. Ever.
Me neither. I don't drink calories. I haven't done it in years. Anyone who thinks they can lose weight while drinking calories it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible.
Yeah. Well, except for shakes, which that includes drinking.
Mm. But you know, even the shakes, Brad, when I take a protein shake, which I will take a protein shake, I like to just mix them with water now. I don't even put milk just to cut back on the calories. And I like to put a teaspoon of coffee and make it almost like one of those mocha coffee drinks.
Oh, yeah.
It's fine.
I do the same thing. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
That's funny. I used to do that way back in the day when we were pre-selling health clubs. I would take hot coffee and put it in a blender and throw a packet of one of the meal replacements and mix it up. It's actually pretty good.
I mean, if anything, that's what these like places like Starbucks should do is offer some kind of protein latte. I mean, at least it's not just all sugar.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's pretty cool. So, well, Mark, tell me this. I mean, obviously you're in business for yourself, but do you see any kind of correlations as far as mindset between the two?
It's an interesting question you bring up. This is one of the secondary benefits of the program and the change that have just carried across into my life. It takes a lot of discipline to make a change like this in your life, whether it's controlling calories or working out intensely in the gym. I mean, you have to work out intensely as well as regularly. You can work out as intense as you want, but if you're only going in once a month, it's not going to really make much of a difference. And the fact that I took this so seriously and decided to apply a certain stringent discipline carried over into my business life, my personal life, I seem to take everything with that level of seriousness. And it's proved to pay off dividends across the board. Just in meeting a client, I'm going to be much more organized and structured. I don't know how other people work out, but for example, I guess, you know, being a tax accountant by profession, and you know, we're very regimented in our thinking, and we tend to document everything. So I would go in with a program, you know, written out as it was in the Adonis system, then come back home the next that evening, put it on an Excel spreadsheet, do comparative analysis, and just, you know, have fun with it, because that was part of the pleasure of working out too, you know, looking back 3 months ago and seeing, you know, what you were able to do and looking at it today. Same thing with body weight. I was measuring body weight and measurements, you know, body part measurements constantly throughout every week. So I was able to, you know, I didn't go quite as nuts as putting it on a graph and trying to map it out, but I was able to look at it. And I found that this ability to try to structure everything applied in your business context, it's fantastic. I mean, this is the way you should run your business. You don't just go in haphazardly and just off the cuff. You do everything very structured and very organized. And it's let me take everything seriously. I find the nutrition aspect is the most important, because being able not to stuff food in your mouth all day is a power that I can't explain it to you. You have to do it for yourself and then experience it. It is liberating to be able to say, I have willpower. I have enough willpower and I have control over my body not to eat all day. And even though I won't use the word hungry, because I don't think we know what hunger is. I think even though I'm comfortable because I have, you know, some sort of a feeling that I want to eat, telling myself I won't eat until tonight, it's something that teaches you about yourself. It teaches you what you need to do to accomplish goals. And anybody who hasn't done this, even if they don't want to follow the program, I think that it's important for them to be able to just not eat for a day and just see what it does.
Just open their eyes.
Yeah, just open your eyes. I mean, some people do it, you know, for religious reasons, spiritual reasons. I mean, this is something that's been in history for thousands and thousands of years. And I mean, when you start researching it, you really start to realize, you know, all the literature on it. But it's liberating. That being said, I think the other extreme is very careful, and I've never really you know, openly talked about it on the forum, but you have to make sure that you don't get carried away with it. I think Brad Pilon really mentioned it in his book, like, you know, fast once or twice a week, but let's not make this a daily thing. Let's not go crazy with this, because if you do let it get out of hand, how is that different from any other eating disorder? It'll just be a fasting eating disorder, and I don't think that's healthy at all. So you have to learn how to balance it in your life.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really good point that you brought up, because me and Brad, before Eat Stop Eat was released, we had tested out various lengths of fast. Like, we had done 36, 48, 72. Like, we messed around with all kinds of stuff. And we arrived back at 24 because of its, like you said, because of its practicality's sake. We do tend to live our lives in 24-hour daily chunks, so it made sense that way. Physiologically, it makes sense because you're well within the highest percentage of burning fat at that point. So a few reasons came together for that number. And the reason we say just once or twice a week and not true intermittent fasting, which is one day on, one day off, because exactly like you said, it becomes obsessive compulsive again. And then people are like, oh, well, maybe I'll just fast 3 days and 4 days and 5 days. And I was like, well, okay, maybe in Richard Lane's case where he's like, I'm going to get rid of as much fat as I can for this contest. Sure, you can do that every now and then. But that's not a lifestyle. Like, that's once or twice a week and looking at your weekly calories, that's doable. And especially because we really say it's flexible. Like, if you planned on Tuesday and something came up on Tuesday, just move it to Wednesday. That's the real key to it all, is really teaching you that all you're doing is, like you've said, Mark, if you have an up day, just have a down day somewhere else.
That's exactly it. And I mean, that's one of the things I use. If I'm invited to a wedding, the day of the wedding, I won't eat much that day, because I know I'm going to want to enjoy myself at that wedding and not think about it. And the day after the wedding, I'm going to really relax on the calories too, and basically negate the effect of that overeating evening. Mm-hmm. And I was also on the forum, I would, try to tell people that find something that fits for you and doesn't become extreme. I mean, yeah, we were all doing a contest, and we were all trying to get as lean as we could. And I think a lot of us really showed some interesting results. But I was, trying to explain to people, I never deprived myself ever. And, looking at the pictures, you might think, oh, well, this guy probably never ate ice cream. But that's the furthest thing from the truth. I had ice cream at least 2-3 times a week. Oh, I ate cake all the time. I would have donuts. I would just make sure not to eat too much of it. But I wouldn't allow myself to be in a mental state where I'd say, oh, for the next 3 months, I can't have a cappuccino, because that's too many calories. I don't want to become that person. Mm. So I'll make sure not to let myself fall into that rut, because what happens, and again, just speaking to my wife and speaking to other people, women are always going on and off diets. And what they find is that they lose the weight and they gain it all back. And why do they gain it all back? Because they felt they deprived themselves too much. And when that pressure came off because they attained their goal or whatever they happened to have done, suddenly, the floodgates, fell down, and they just went right back to their old eating habits.
Yeah, they just,
so it's about developing new habits.
They just go nuts, I think that's the biggest key point that we haven't never really quite touched on, is the deprivation. You can eat in a deficit without being deprived, and that's a distinction no one really, until you said that, no one really thinks of it that way. They just assume deficit means deprivation when it. Like I will not give up my morning coffee and whatever the sweet thing is I eat with it. I just simply won't. And, I lost 40 pounds doing that. But I won't give it up. And I would have never made it through that if someone told me, well, you can't have sugar in your coffee and you can't have a donut or a muffin with that. I'll be like, well, no, that's BS. There's no way I would get through it that way.
See, exactly. I think, you live the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You're able to show that you don't deprive yourself. So when people will see you eating that, they'll say, well, how do you stay in shape eating that? Well, it's very simple. You've just made a decision to not eat something else.
Yeah. All I know is I can only hit a certain number of calories today, and I'm choosing to hit them with these foods right now.
Exactly. One question I get all the time when people see my abs is, oh, man, you must work out your abs all the time. And, when I tell them, well, actually, I don't do any ab work, and people don't understand that. To this date, I actually did no ab work for this transformation contest. I didn't do a single sit-up or a single leg raise.
And you probably have the most defined set of abs.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I don't think you need to do it. Maybe I did ab work in my, my younger days, so maybe I developed some underlying muscle. I don't know. But, I think it was Pilon who said it. He says, we all have the abs. We just got fat covering them up.
Yeah, well, most people don't understand the physiology of the core muscles anyways. And even physiologists who study it don't quite understand how they work. So any trainer who says they know what they're know how it works, they actually don't. The ab muscles work under all of the heavy lifting anyways, so there's not really any much necessity at all to train abs directly, but I don't know. I guess people get kicks. They just like the way it feels when they fill up with blood, so people can knock themselves out with ab training, but you just don't have to train them if you're doing a comprehensive workout that works the whole body with, you just don't have to train them directly. I just don't know why people, I don't know. I think people just like the biofeedback of feeling them pump up.
I think people are expected to train abs. Everybody in my gym trains abs. And I try to tell them, get under a squat rack, squat a lot of weight, and tell me if you don't feel it in your abs.
Yeah.
Do a military press, do a deadlift. You don't need to do ab training, but if you don't do it, people seem to think that, well, you have to. It's part of the problem. It's like saying I'm gonna train arms and never do a barbell curl. Well, how could you do that, right? But you can do it. You could train your arms by just doing something else.
It's just the way, I don't know. It's that specific muscle people don't understand. So, but yeah, I mean, you're living proof that you don't have to train them. So, I don't know. I guess that's one message that I don't know that I'll ever get through to people. But hey, whatever.
Well, I don't know. I think maybe putting a specialization module for abs might not have helped either, John.
Well, and do you know why we've always had that in there? Because people were demanding it. And it was easier for me to give them what I think is a good way to train abs than fight them on I think it was a harder message to tell people you don't really need to do this, because I think they would go somewhere else to find an ab program anyways. So I at least put in core exercises that I agree with. Let me say it that way.
Right.
Yeah, that's also part of the reasons for foundations as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, not meaning to kind of give away the trade secret, but it's not really. But you know, one of the big things with Adonis at the very beginning was, you know, people would look at it and it would stray so far from what they were used to seeing that the dissonance was huge. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh God, this is just so far away from what I'm used to seeing that, you know, so we were actually losing a lot of people before we could really connect with them. So, and then coming across and finding out that a lot of people really didn't have the training experience that, so that's why we put in foundations, because it's a little more familiar to most people. So it's like, oh, okay. So it allows us to connect and allows them to get really some good results, but it also addresses that need that we didn't realize was coming across as well. So I don't know if we ever talked about that, but yeah, that's why that's there as well.
Well, it's news to me, and I can tell you the foundation program was much more of a bread and butter program that I recognized right away. You know, the exercises and just the way it was put together. It's more familiar. It's a comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus sure. Adonis, which is something completely new. And you're, you know, even the exercises, you know, we're not all familiar with all these different exercises, but a lot of people, what they got in their minds initially was that, I guess because maybe it was the way it was promoted, was that foundation was for the newbies, the guys who really had no experience in the gym, and you know, it was a way to bring them up to par with the guys that, you know, had 5 or 10 years under their belts. But I even was very hesitant to do foundation, and you know, I remember, you know, emailing with John about this, and you know, I said, well, again, you know, he's the expert. If he's telling me to do it, you know, I'd send him a couple of pictures. But I think after going through the program, I think people seeing the results on the program, I think we're going to have a few more people doing foundation, because it's not a newbie program. Not if you do it well. Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, any program on paper is nothing until the person puts their intensity into it and their experience. So I think following the mega cycle as written, or even just the first giant cycle as written, I think everyone can just roll through that. At any experience level, a beginner or someone who's got quite a bit of experience the way you do.
True.
But Howard, you got anything else we need to cover here? I think we're getting close to the end.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, we really kind of went through a lot. There were a lot of good insights here. I mean, I think one of the things that you really keyed on was temperance. We never really put a word to it, but I think that's kind of what you're talking about, Mark. I think Ben Franklin, that's one of his, like, big things that was in his virtues or whatever, and one of them is temperance, whereas, you know, you can do it. It's kind of like dose, same thing, but
right.
It's just not too much. You can do it, but not too much. And he was kind of that way about everything, alcohol and all that type of stuff. And it just kind of comes around, you know. Yeah, you can do it, but just not too much. You can do it, not too much. And then that way you're not depriving yourself. You get to maneuver a little bit and give yourself some flexibility. I think what we can definitely say, and from talking to you, is that you truly feel like you've got this whole thing handled.
Absolutely. I mean, for once in my life, I won't say that I understand it all, because I'm far from understanding why it works, but I understand what I need to do to get the results, and that's already 90% of the battle. One thing that's interesting is that when I decided to get into the transformation contest, I already knew coming into that contest that I probably wouldn't have the dramatic or the drastic results that other people would have, simply because I'd already gone much of the way. But it was a sense of curiosity to say, if I were to apply myself, how far could I go? How lean can I get? How defined can I get? How muscular can I get? And it's amazing, because I took pictures practically every week for 3 months, and the transformation, my internal transformation, watching them revealed a lot of things where I thought I'd arrived, and I hadn't arrived, because the next week I'd say, oh, well, look, I got a little further. And even now, here I was, you saw those pictures, and you'd say, well, okay, I'm pretty defined. And I look at them and I say, well, is that as lean as I can get while still looking healthy? Of course, I mean, you can get scrawny and all that, but that's not the purpose. And in my conscious mind will say, yes, of course, I couldn't possibly get leaner, but in the back of my mind I'm saying, but couldn't I if I really wanted to? What more could I do?
I got to tell you, Mark, your pictures, what kind of threw us over the top for announcing the open contest.
Well, when
we saw you, were like, okay, this is the bar has just been raised. We have to do something here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was you came in, and then obviously Alan came in, and then obviously, you know, Jason smack on the forum, so we had to figure out a way to bring him back into the mix. You know, so it.
Well, there's nowhere for guys like Pierre and Jason and Ron and you, and there's where they go. I mean, there has to be another venue, and that's what it's for.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it'll be a lot of fun because I think everybody's going to bring something different. Like, I know coming into that contest, I don't plan to compete like with one of the big guys in terms of overall size. It's not where I want to go, even if I could.
Yeah, I think Gaddafi's going to be in it. He's going to be tough to beat as far as size.
Exactly. I think I'd like to come in more with a symmetry. I want to try to work on symmetry and proportion. And even in the muscle building program, calf work is non-existent. Besides, you know, the side effect for the ancillary effect from squats. But I work a lot at maintaining a proportion between neck, arms, and calves. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important symmetrically.
The reason calf work's not in there is because calves are so genetic. Some guys have huge calves and never touch mm-hmm. them, and other guys just need to do them every day. And so as far as calf work goes, it's literally like if you know you're one of those guys, you either have the luxury of just skipping them, or you're one of the unfortunate guys who has to hit them every day for like an extra couple hundred reps. So that's almost like a non-issue calves. You either do them a lot or you don't touch them.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of a genetic – well, me and my brother –
you guys are freaks. Kind of that's genetic, the way you say it.
Yeah, we're kind of genetic outliers on that one. I mean, like literally.
No, Brad, there's an outlier, then there's a freak. You guys are freaks.
Okay, well, there you go. Okay. We, literally, I was in the gym about 2 months ago, and I was walking. I saw this one girl that I see in the gym all the time. I just introduced myself and was walking off ahead of her, and she just asked me, she goes, all right, you got to tell me. She goes, do you work calves, like, every day or what? I was like, honestly, I was like, I barely work them at all. Yeah. I was like, my brother has calves that look just like mine. She goes, you guys are lucky.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? When you see someone with big calves like that, you almost know for sure they never train them because it's all genetics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, literally one of the things, any calf machine, even the seated calf raise, I mean, I can load that thing up with all the way to the thing with 45s, and I can pop out, you know, 10, 15, and not do them. I mean, if I warm up right, I can just do it. Same thing with just about anything else. Any leg press, I can, if I want to do calves, when I load it up to as much weight as it can handle, and I can do it. It's just always been that way. So it's weird, you know. So I guess the biggest disservice I could ever do anybody would be to write a calf program and then use myself as a example of what it can get you. But I think a lot of guys do that.
Sure.
For a body part, yeah.
All right, so
yeah, I think
well let's get some closing insights from Mark, like our kind of standard round of Brad, you say it better than I do.
Yeah, I mean if you had anything that you wanted to, it's kind of the definitive things that you've discovered for yourself, the big ideas, and just the things that, you know, people, you're either or even under your age, that you can kind of impart to people, the big advice, I guess mostly kind of the stuff you've been telling other people around your own lives, what would it be?
Well, it's a mouthful there, huh? You know, put me on the spot, why don't you? The first thing would be, I get this comment in the gym all the time, and most of the guys in my gym are in their 20s, you know, late 20s, and the fact that, you know, a guy, you know, 42 years old can go in there and, you know, within less than a 12-month period, completely transform not only the way he looks, but also how strong he gets into the gym. A lot of the younger guys come up to me and they tell me, you know, you're showing us that it's never too late, you can always make a change in yourself. And I wouldn't want to say they look up to me as a model or something, a role model or anything like that, but you can see that when they come up to me, they're like, you know what, here's a guy who's living the life. It's not just, you know, hype in the air. So that's the first thing I tell people. It's not because you're overweight or you got some sort of condition that you can't start this transformation. Yeah, it's not going to take a week. It's not going to take a month, but it's okay. It'll take as long as it takes. And if it takes you less time than me, that's great. And if it takes you more time, that's great too. It's not a race. It's a destination, you know. We got to get there. We're all going to get there eventually. We just want to do it in a way that keeps us healthy. The second thing is basically with respect to getting control of your life. Most people are not happy about the way they look, some more than others. And this is something that you absolutely have the ability to take control of. And if you choose to make that decision, if you take that decision and you choose to control this aspect of your life, the rest of the ducks will just line up and everything else in your life will slowly start to fall in place. Because as I think you've mentioned it before, Brad, in a podcast, it's the confidence that you give off when you feel good about yourself is going to have a natural, you know, after effect. And a natural, I guess you call it a halo effect, or it's going to carry across your life. I've noticed myself, just my wife and I, you know, my wife's always been, you know, trying to deal with nutritional issues, and we always ate healthy, and she always took care of herself and never let herself get, you know, overweight. But she never was a person who liked to work out with weights. You know, she would work cardio or aerobics, and I actually just purchased Venus for her, and I purchased it because I thought it would be a great thing for her, but seeing the contest, until she saw the pictures up, she never really thought that she wanted to do this. But seeing the contest pictures really gave her that impetus to say, you know what, I'm going to do this because I'm curious. And that's, I guess, the feeling. Be curious about what it can do. And you know what, if it doesn't do what you think it is, that's fine, but have the curiosity to look for it.
Yeah, that's pretty strong. I mean, it's kind of one of the things that a lot of people just seem to have this victim mentality. And this is why I like this type of stuff, because you can physically, like, other people see it. It's one of those things that if once you get it handled, everybody knows you have it handled. And it just, it naturally, yeah, of course you're going to radiate confidence because you finally kind of got out of that mindset where things are happening to you and you've actually imparted your will upon the world and made a change because you wanted to do it, whatever it took. You basically, it's really weird. It's almost like you're fighting the world to get what you want, but it happens and you're like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay.
And it seems one of the only ways, seems the most effective way to do it is to do it covertly. Keep it as to yourself as possible, so to speak, because so many people are going to try to hold you back that it almost comes across as like effortless to other people, and they see, because they don't see how you eat. They see you in social events eating, you know, right along with them. You know, they don't, unless they're right next to you in the gym, they can't really see that part either. So it's almost like it's just sort of magically happening, and then one day you look back and you're like, well, what happened? How the hell did that happen? But they're not there when you're making the conscious effort to change eating, you know, one meal for a different meal, or doing some fasting, or cutting calories in one spot and putting them somewhere else. You know, they're not there when you're grinding out every set in the gym. So to them, it's just you're the lucky one. They don't know how much work it took. I think that's what makes it even more impressive to people, when you don't put the face up. You don't, like, yeah, I'm the workout guy, I'm the diet guy. But when you keep it sort of to yourself, it becomes even that much more impressive to everybody else.
Yeah, and what happens is people have a resentment. It's like, you know, you take the guy who's the millionaire and who's living, you know, the high life and has got the cars, the boats, and the money, and people resent that, even though they don't want to admit it. But they don't realize maybe that guy, you know, went bankrupt two or three times in his life and picked himself up and just kept going and kept going, and that person deserves that success that they got. But people just look at the end result. I see a lot of people in the gym that go to a gym to socialize, and that's okay, I guess, you know, if that's your thing. But they tend to find a comfort in the gym by being surrounded by people of their mindset. And for me, the gym is not that at all. For me, the gym is just a tool to be used for life. The gym is not the life. Mm-hmm. And whether it's going to the gym and socializing because you're not in shape, and by hanging out with people in the gym who aren't in shape, you give yourself the impression that you're doing something good, and that makes you feel good about yourself. Or going to the gym and working out because maybe you become, you know, a big bodybuilder, muscular, and that's the only place where you get some sort of a positive reinforcement from people, because people outside in the world don't really acknowledge you for, you know, your three plate bench press or whatever you happen to do. I see a lot of people that use the gym in that sense, and it's okay if that was the purpose to go to in going to the gym, but all too often I realize it's the byproduct and it's all they can latch onto at the end. Mm-hmm. And I just use it as a tool. I go there. I rarely talk to anybody. I mean, I'm social. Hi, how are you? But I'm not there to start a conversation. I'm there to do my business and then to get out hopefully within the hour, hour and a half, and go on with my life.
And that's the exact pattern that people who get results do. It's the gym's a tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the final thing I wanted to touch on that you both you guys kind of touched on, I just want to kind of reiterate it and kind of put it in a different perspective, is that, you know, basically kind of, I don't want to say covert equals this, but one of the biggest things that you're talking about, I don't think that most people are getting, is that you really kind of internalize your own goals instead of externalize them. So in broadcasting and putting on a big show, you've actually just taken that goal and because you're doing everything yourself and you've basically internalized it, which I think is really important for people to do, to take that goal that they want and really internalize it and just make it part of, you know, their destination, kind of what you were saying. So I think that's one of the big benefits of kind of what we're talking about. We've never talked about that before, but just kind of thinking about it right then, that's kind of what happens, that transition from it being wishful thinking, which is kind of an externalized goal, to kind of an actual desire, which happens when you kind of internalize that goal and kind of hold it around in your stomach and in your head and kind of just grind through it, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole, are you doing it for show or are you doing it for the result? So, well, I mean, I think we're good here. Mark, that was great. Brad, you got anything else?
Yeah. Nah, man, I really appreciate you being on the call, Mark.
Thank you so much for interviewing me and for giving me the chance to share my story with everybody. And I look forward to continuing to share on the forum and the next contest. It's been a lot of fun. You know, if somebody's never gotten into a contest, they should. Even the people who think that they're not ready for it should do it anyway, because it's just a great experience and it teaches you a lot about yourself. And there you go.
Yeah, awesome. Couldn't have said it better myself. All right. Well, for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.